you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Ralph Sutton, Big J Oakerson, and boy, do we got a doozy of an episode for you, Jay.
I don't know. Take two, dude. I don't like the way that came.
No?
I don't know. Yeah, the energy was weird. It felt real shticky.
All right. What is up, my fellow addicts? Ralph Sutton, Big J Oakerson. This week, Jay is ecstatic. Why? Robbie Krieger of The Doors.
Okay, you know what? Let's start it one more time.
No, nope, I'm not starting
it. Put a little staccato in it, though.
I'm going to punch you in the face if I could. I felt you're already being shitty to me this entire evening.
You better not cut out any of this. This should be the cold open. This is the show, guys.
This is the show. We had to reschedule this four times. This is how much Jay wants to talk to Robbie Krieger.
Yeah, Ralph, listen. First of all, Robbie Krieger canceled a couple of those times.
Yeah, well, I didn't say who canceled anything. Why do you think I was talking about you?
Every week, you feed this beast that people say I don't like you when I love you. I say it every time. Every time I'm on the show, I tell you that I love you.
And then you shit on me for the entire hour every
you
week.
You choose to live a ridiculous lifestyle that no one around you understands. Your own mother can't even say it to you. She thinks it. She wanted grandkids.
You guys speak it. You guys speak all the time.
You're ripping that from her.
We do, by the way. Shut your mouth for a second. We do the show every Wednesday, every Saturday. Go to gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use the code SDR. You get 20% off the entire network. Robbie Krieger of The Doors. No more Jay shitting on me. Here it is.
We've been talking, and we're concerned.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the host. It's weed, I beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, it's far, you need to know. The SDR Show. Let's go.
It is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. I am Ralph Sutton. With me, usually, at least once a week, is Big J Oakerson. And Jay, every time you miss an episode, boy, do people wonder if you quit. I don't know why that keeps
every
going.
Every time?
Every single time. I don't know why that is. It's crazy. Shannon is there doing the production stuff. And now, it's rare to say this and mean it 100%, but how could you not? This guy, not only in one of the most influential bands of all time, he's also a fellow Jew. All right. Thank God.
Yeah.
Need more of us in the world.
Rock and roll Jews. We are a rare bunch.
former group.
Former group. And from a little band you might know of called The Doors, he has a new book coming out tomorrow as we're taping this called Set the Night on Fire, Living, Dying, and Playing Guitar with The Doors. It is none other than Robbie Krieger. How are you, sir?
I'm great. Thanks.
Thank you so much for joining us. Let me say something right off the top, which makes me laugh. In doing research on you, I always try and do a decent amount of research and reading through pages of stuff, and you read things like, it says the Miami incident, the New Haven incident, the Ed Sullivan Show incident. It was like reading a rap sheet more than it was reading a bio for a band. Do you look at bands today as like a bunch of pussies because they don't have any kind of thing like that?
Well, I think some do. I think maybe they just don't list them.
Maybe.
Ralph, excuse me for one second. I'm going to grab something that I want to show Robbie Krieger that I think's pretty neat.
Okay, sure. Please do that.
Yeah, it's an art thing.
Yeah, it really, by the way, it boggles my mind so much so that there's so much history with this band. And not only with the band, but you've continued to just do other things as well over the years. We'll get into, like, just last year you released The Ritual Begins at Sundown, a solo record, first time in years, but you are not only keeping active with Door stuff, but you keep super active in all forms of entertainment, which I give you credit for constantly doing that. That can't be easy.
Well, it would be boring if I didn't.
All right, Jay, what did you bring?
So someone, a fan gave this to me actually, which is pretty amazing, but it is it's a print of you on stage and Jim getting arrested in New Haven, and it's printed on acid tab paper.
Oh, nice.
Oh, wow. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's pretty neat, pretty amazing.
Yeah. All right, let me ask you.
We tell about that in the book, obviously.
So obviously, yeah, there's a book out now. I mean, it comes out tomorrow. You're also doing a Q&A, I think, the day after or tomorrow on Dice FM, all about the book and stuff. And the things I keep reading about is that there are certain stories and certain aspects of your history with the Doors that this is the first time that you're telling the true version of it, or at least your truth to what happened. And before we get into that, it's very obvious that there are things that have always been portrayed incorrectly about this band. Most recently, you came out and explained the whole Ed Sullivan incident in a 180 to the way we've all thought it was for the last 40 years.
You know, Ralph, let me say what I always found was interesting about that was, so I became a fan of the Doors when I was very young, and it was based off the movie. I think probably oddly a lot of people came into it that way. And then if you did a deep dive into the band, you realize a lot of that was nonsense and done a different way, but made amazing for, you know, theatrical purposes. But when I found the Ed Sullivan actual footage, like the way it was portrayed in the movie, like he got into the camera, almost like licked the camera and was like, fuck you, America. It almost seemed like, and I could relate to this because I've had this with comedy, where I think it looked more like he went on autopilot and just didn't think to change the word is what it seemed like more. And he just never thought about it. It was so passed over that it was not like in the face the way they made it seem in the movie.
I mean, you know, when they told us to do that, we thought they were kidding. I mean, it was so stupid, you know? So I think we just, you know, especially Jim, I think he said, oh, fuck that. I'll just do it the regular way.
Because also at that time, it was not like it was a new song. It was already a hit. It was already being played on the radio, and you had already performed it on other shows. So it seemed insane. I could see how you thought, well, that's obviously not serious.
Right. I mean, but, you know, the Stones caved in on that. The year before, they were on, and they had to say, instead of spend some time together.
Right. And you guys are credited for making Ed Sullivan uncool, which is kind of wild.
Well, I don't think we had to do that. I mean, the show was a silly show, let's face it, for years. You know, and all the animal acts and, the
Bogey show?
Yeah, the puppets. And, you know, the only reason we did it is because at the time, that was the only national show that you could get on and play a song on. Right. So, you know, right after that, there started to become quite a few shows that did that. So we didn't, you know, we knew we'd never play Ed Sullivan again, but we didn't care.
Yeah, because you did it once. What's the difference? And it's funny because Jay touches on the movie, and I'm sure you've gone through this a million times, but Manzarek said that it did real damage to the guy he knew, the Jim Morrison, the poet is how he put it. But you said, well, it wasn't great, but it certainly could have been a lot worse, which I think is a better way to acknowledge it.
That's pretty cool.
You know, what's funny too, as growing up and being a performer myself, it is funny that I use Jim Morrison as a big prime example of this, because when I was young, and again, I'd read the stories and the poetry books and all the things. I thought the things that I thought were so cool when I was a child, as a performer now, I was like, oh, they say he missed the show in Amsterdam because he was out taking pills all day with Jefferson Airplane, and Ray Manzarek had to sing all the words. And I'm like, what a rock star. And now I'm like, hey, dickhead, show up to the show on time. You got a show to do. There's an audience waiting there, you asshole.
Well, that's how we thought about it.
Yeah, for sure. Did you any chance, just last week, as we're taping this, you guys were portrayed very amusingly in Family Guy, the TV show. Did you watch that or hear about that or no?
No, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, it literally just happened. They did a great piece on you guys. They did three rock stories, like history of bands, and there's an animated version of you and Family Guy last week.
Oh, yeah, I didn't hear about that, but I didn't see it.
It's really funny.
Was it any good?
Yeah, it was great. Oh, yeah, it was fun. It was definitely funny. But it leads me to something, because they kind of touch it on there. And Jay hates this in every musical biopic that's ever come out, which is about how songs actually are written. Like somebody said in the in the studio, hey, you should just love me two times. And you go, wait a minute, write that down. And then the song comes about.
The Queen one, the Queen one was the worst. He was just stomping his foot in anger. And they were like, hang on a minute. That's a little something there.
So someone who wrote, you know, some amazing Doors songs, was it that organic? Like Light My Fire, did someone just say, did Jim just, hey, man, why don't you stop lighting my fire? And you're like, hold on a second. Like, how did that come about?
You know, maybe for Jim it was like that, but not for me. I never just grabbed a word out of the air. I always started with the music first. And then the music somehow would suggest words to me. That sounds weird, but that's not.
I can get that. Did you ever embrace the Jose Feliciano version of Light My Fire?
You know, at first I hated it. Because it wasn't really like our version at all. It didn't have the Bach organ thing in there, and it was kind of more commercial sounding. But then, you know, as I would hear it over and over, I noticed the guitar playing was so cool, and I really started digging it. You know,
right?
Especially when, because of his version, every artist in the world started doing it, and it became a standard, and probably is worth more than any of our other songs.
And it's one of the first songs you wrote with them, with the Doors, correct?
It was the first.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's been downhill ever since.
The thing that I'm really, so many stories that I hear and I'm like, Jesus Christ, is this true? Is that true? And I just have to ask you these things because there's such a pantheon of great little moments. But I read that on the third rehearsal, you guys are barely know each other. You're on your third rehearsal. Everybody shows up but Jim. And you're like, where is he? So you called a friend. They go, oh, Jim's in jail because he had a fight with the Hells Angels last night. Is that real? Like, that really happened?
Yeah, that really happened. That was at our second rehearsal, right? The first rehearsal went pretty well, except for near the end of it, some guy came in and Jim said, hey, Phil, come over in the bathroom for a minute. I need to talk to you. And then we could hear screaming and yelling, and obviously it was a pot deal gone bad or something. But that was kind of normal in those days, you know.
Right.
But then the second rehearsal was at my parents' house, and my parents weren't home, so we set up in the living room, and we're waiting for Jim. Supposed to be there at 1 o'clock or whatever. And we waited hours and hours. He never showed up. And finally, we got a call. Hey, Jim's in jail. He's in Blythe, California, which is halfway out to, you know, who knows where. And it turned out him and his buddies were on a little road trip, and they went in a bar and got in a big fight with some Hells Angels. Jesus, they all ended up in jail. And that was the second rehearsal.
Did that ingratiate you more, like, oh, this guy's a badass, we need him in our band? Or was it, let's rethink bringing this guy in as the lead singer?
Yeah, it was more that. It was more than that.
Yeah, I have to.
Fucking couldn't even, wow.
I have to assume. I always think to myself, because everything, you know, he died so young, and everything's shrouded in such like mystery. So you know, he's very like mysterious and had this like edge to him. But was there just moments in a car where he was like, "Hey guys, I'm hungry. Want to hit a diner?" Or was everything always like, you know, was it always like the sands of time are floating through the hourglass? And we are all lizard people.
No, he was like the most normal guy you'd ever want to meet most of the time, you know.
Yeah.
But then he you would look in his poetry books. He always carried a little notebook around, and just this amazing stuff, like, where did that come from? And obviously he had been a amazing reader when he was in school. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the stuff that he wrote wasn't in high school. The Doors stuff obviously was later, but once in a while you pick up a line here or two. Like, for instance, the line "Set the Night on Fire," which is the last four lines of the song, because it's just the way I had it was just, "Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire." So he says, hey, on those last two or three times, he says, "Let's say, try to set the night on fire." And I thought, oh, that's cool. Okay. So that became the way we did it. And then just recently, I found out that the "set the night on fire" was a line that he had in one of his poetry books from high school.
Wow.
So he dug back in his mind and pulled that out. Have you guys seen the new poetry book that came out?
I did not, no.
It's amazing, man. It's like a coffee table size book of all of his, not only the lyrics, but the stuff he'd done in high school and when he was a kid. And it's amazing. You got to check that out.
Definitely take a look at it.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Let me ask you this question. So, like, in my life, I have been, and Jay can attest this, will date not the smartest chicks in the world, but maybe they are gorgeous or I'm fun to hang out with, whatever. But they believe in astrology or they believe in flat earth. And I just, yeah, like,
Ralph
put up with it.
Ralph tells them all that an Indian spirit leapt into his body when he saw a car accident.
So I will put up with it solely because I'm like, well, she's hot. I'm going to get in her pants. So I just put up with it, right? My question is, at some point in the beginning, before you guys became
terrible, you make terrible first impressions.
I make terrible first impressions. So, did you at any point, like when he's Mr. Poetry, Lizard King, all this stuff, and you guys are just starting out, he's getting to fights and all this other shit, are you like putting up with it because you think this guy is gold, or are you embracing it and believing in it? Like, were you like, yeah, maybe he is, like, and where was your headspace?
Maybe he is a Lizard King. You've never been
maybe
in the kingdom.
I don't know. So I was saying, were you like, all right, that's just Jim being a jackass? Or you're like, yeah, no, we get this.
Well, a lot of the time he was just a normal guy. Like I said, he was, the nicest guy you'd ever want to hang out with, But then the other stuff would happen. And yeah, I have to admit, it was because we knew that his words were so amazing. And we just could feel that we could be the biggest band ever, mm-hmm. And that's why we would put up with him. And another reason, well, he, it was his idea to split publishing and writing four ways.
Oh, wow. Though,
he wrote more than, 50% of the stuff easily. And, he knew that we wouldn't put up with him had he not done that.
Oh, Axl Rose should have learned a lesson.
And by the way, I tried finding this out, and maybe I just, it escaped my research, but how did you guys actually meet for the first time? Where did that genesis happen?
Well, the three, me and Jim and Ray all were at UCLA, but I didn't really know them that well there. But one night, their Maharishi had come to L.A. for the first time, mm-hmm. right? And John and Ray and I were all into meditation. And I happen to know the guy's brother that went over to India and found Maharishi, Peter Wallace, Peter Wallace. Mm-hmm. And I talk about that in the book. And it just so happened that John, Ray, and I were at that first meditation meeting, which was just up at a house in the Palisades here. Maybe 12 people there, and then three of them were doors.
So oh, wow.
Pretty amazing. And, you know, but of course, Ray was the one that, you know, met Jim out on the beach that day, and Jim read him the words. And so that's really where it started. But yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Have you kept up with the meditation all these years or no?
I do. Yeah.
I do it every morning. Jay, how are you feel about meditation?
Way to throw me under the bus after you said you did it. I should
totally on purpose.
No, I think I actually do. I've tried it before for sure, and I have friends that are super into TM, transcendental meditation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thanks for shortening it.
It's expensive to learn that, and but no, I think it's a great thing. Actually, I wish I could find time or knew how to do it well.
We tried to get Jim to do it. You know, we took him to a meeting one time where Maharishi was there, and he says, "Hey, can we get close to him?" You know, so we waited until after the thing was over, and we went up and kind of, you know, wheedled ourselves in up to the front where Maharishi was talking to some people, and Jim says, "I want to get his vibes. You know, I want to check him out." So he snuck up right next to him, and he looked him in the eye for a second, you know, and Maharishi looks back, and then Jim comes back and I said, "Well, what do you think?" He goes, "I got nothing, man. That guy's got nothing."
Really?
Didn't feel a thing.
Crazy.
I was unfortunate because I think that really would have helped him, you know.
Right. Or maybe I think that maybe he'd still be with us if you could have strangled him down to do some meditation. You never know. You tell a lot of stories in the book that you say you've never told before. Like there was one, I saw a picture where you had a black guy on stage at one TV appearance and you're finally talking about it. Are these stories that you specifically held because you knew one day I'm going to write my version in my book, or are just things that just never got around to telling?
Well, you know, that particular story, we were playing the Smothers Brothers show, and I had just been in an auto wreck a couple of days before. And so we got to the show and I looked a mess, man. It was like really bad. And so the makeup gal comes over and says, "Okay, we're going to fix this. Don't worry." You know, I go, no, let's not. Let's just, I think it'll be cool to come out with a black eye. And then maybe 50 years from now, some idiot will ask me about it, you know?
That's me.
So I was right. You know what? That is the most asked question I get.
Oh, really?
Yeah, by far. You know, because people think, I want to ask him something cool that nobody else might ask him about. And they all have the same idea.
Oh, that's funny. Well, I'm sorry to be so hacky.
Well, you can you'll read about it in the book. It's kind of a sad story, but it's informative.
All right, before we go any further, I want to talk to you about one of our favorite sponsors. They're part of this show for a long time. It is Yo Delta.
What up, dog?
Not sounds so street. Hey, Delta 8.
I've been living in New York now for a while.
That's why.
The hip hop culture is pretty dope.
I was trying to understand why all of a sudden the Yo Delta vampire had so much street cred.
Well, some would say it's spending all this time with the Glide Wizard. Huh. You know, the master of the glide.
The Bronzo Sensuale himself?
You may know him from the silver screen when he graced our presence in Crush Groove.
Wow. You know a lot about my history, Yo Delta
I've
Vampire.
I've done some deep dives into the Wikipedia that you made for yourself.
I wish I had one. If you're over the age of 21 and living in the majority of the states where this is legal, it's time to stock up on Delta 8. What
check
is Delta
out,
8?
Check out season 5 of 21 Jump Street at this bar in Miami. For a second, you might see Ralph.
Yeah, you fucking bailed on that show before you got to season 5, so I couldn't even come on your stupid podcast.
It'll come back. The world's going to shut down again. Everyone's dying still.
Well,
hey, Ralph.
Hey, wait, who are you? Who are you?
Right side. Hang on.
Who are you? Who is this person?
Tough the Vampire. He's getting his dick sucked, dude. This guy is nonstop.
Wow.
This guy parties. There's a girl doing Delta 8 gummies off his dick.
That's what I say.
Vampire dick.
He can't talk because he's getting blown?
That's weird. Boy, did I need that. Really got the poison out.
I don't know how Jay got here so quick. Okay, it's something found legally in weed that can definitely get you high. They have vapes. They have gummies. It's yoDelta.com. Use the code GAS. Get 25% off your entire order. That's yoDelta.com. Promo code GAS. Jay and Yo Delta Vampire, why don't you guys say peace out together?
Okay. What if I do it, dude? That would fuck your whole head up so hard.
That would fucking blow my mind. All right, let's get back.
Two voice to like Paranormal Activity.
All right, let's get back into it. I read also, and I'm sorry if I'm going to be repeating what other people have asked you, but you started playing trumpet, then you went to guitar, and part of why your guitar sound maybe is more unique is that not directly under, but you worked with the guy that was under Ravi Shankar, and that brought you into the sitar world, which I think maybe is why the door sound had a little bit of a different vibe. Am I right on that?
Well, that's one reason. I mean, I had been into Indian music for quite a while up till that point. And then, John and I both went to this Ravi Shankar school. Mm-hmm. It was in Hollywood, and that was pretty cool. But really, I'd been into Indian music for years, and I used to go to sleep to Ravi Shankar playing I used to love this one album. It's called Ravi Shankar in London. It had a white cover. That's my favorite.
And let me, because your band.
Can I say something?
I'm sorry, yeah, Jay.
It's you're being wonderfully gracious, which is awesome. Because when you're the last one with us to tell the story, you could just take credit for everything now. You'd be like, Jim Morrison was a puppet that was assigned to us.
Well, most people they ask me, why is the door still so relevant today and stuff, and I usually say, well, it's because of the guitar playing.
That's very good. Very, very well so.
John says that it's the drumming, but
when Ray, I guess, was it Ray that was adamant about let's not have a bass player? I can handle this. And were you guys like, don't be a jackass, let's bring in a bass player? Like, what actually made that happen?
Well, we always had a bass player on the records.
Right.
But in person, I don't know. It just never seemed to work out. We tried various guys, we tried people out, and we actually asked Doug Lubon, who was the guy that did the second and third albums with us. We asked him to join the group, but he was in a band called The Clear Light, and they thought they were going to be really big.
You're an idiot.
biggest mistake of his life.
Yeah, well, look at you're going to go see that Clear Light 50th anniversary reunion that's coming up, anybody?
No, they were really good, though. They were actually on Elektra Records, and they were the first group to have double drums before the Allman Brothers.
Oh, really? Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
L.A. Woman celebrated 50 years, I think, last year or this year. I'm not exactly sure, but it's one or the other.
This year, I think.
This year. You get crazy with COVID, with timing and stuff. When you recorded the first record, you were 19. With that record, you were 25. Lover Madly was on the record. How different was your headspace 6 years later? Was there real camaraderie in the band still? Was it like already tons of problems? Like, where was your headspace at that point?
Well, we were kind of messed up. I mean, Jim had been, on the liquor for a couple of years by now. And so that, caused all kinds of problems, including Miami, and that was really the reason why we weren't touring, is because of the Miami show. They wouldn't let us play anywhere.
Were you actually on acid when that all went down?
No. No, that's another lie.
Damn.
I felt like I was.
I was going to say, you probably wish you were.
Yeah.
Could you feel on that stage, you're like, this is going to hell immediately? Like, this is like, there's no salvaging this?
You know what? It wasn't all that bad. I mean, to tell you the truth, it wasn't that different than any door show. You know, because anything could happen, you know.
Sure.
And once the stage collapsed, that was it for the show. And but then we went back upstairs and the cops were there and nobody got arrested. The police were actually really nice and they were having beers with us upstairs after the show. So it wasn't until a week later or so that these fucking politicians started making a big deal out of about the show, and they put out an arrest warrant for Jim. So one really was not his fault. I mean, except for inviting everybody up on stage, that wasn't too smart.
I would say so. I didn't know this, by the way, Jay. You're gonna make fun of me when looking up L.A. Woman. I realized as I was reading it, I'm an idiot. I didn't realize Mr. Mojo Rising was an anagram for Jim Morrison. Never dawned on me until reading it that moment, which is, I don't know how many years I've known of the song. Did you know, Jay, or you didn't know?
Yes.
I didn't know. I felt so stupid.
Yeah, well, it was in the movie. So you were obviously asleep.
At that point, yeah. And then also this.
That's a really funny movie thing that talk about a moment that I wished was real, but knew immediately it wasn't. That movie was when the stage collapsed. And they does Dead Cats, Dead Rats into Break On Through, which is one of my favorite Doors movies of all time. Yeah. But when the thing, it looks so great, because he's like, look at, he's running around the audience. There's an imaginary Indian behind. But people were like, you don't think he sang the song in the audience? I go, well, that'll be one hell of a mic cord. like the PA was still all working while he was running through the audience.
Well, you know, Albert Collins, you know who he is?
No.
He's a blues guy, and he would do that all the time. He had like a 100-foot cord, and he'd go out into the back of the audience and be playing his guitar and stuff.
But I did learn that Riders on the Storm was inspired by Ghost Riders in the Sky, which is a very similar sounding song, and I never knew that. And that came out of a jam session like Jay Feels Never Really Happens. But that happened. You're playing once, and hey, let's switch the words and do it this way. And that's what happened there.
Yeah, exactly. And that was really fun, you know. A couple of the songs ended up being like that from that set from the LA Woman album. In fact, LA Woman, the song, was like that. We were just jamming, and Jim started coming up with these words about LA. And I think that had Jim returned from Paris had we continued on, I think that's kind of how we would have been recording from then on, because to me that was the cool way to do it, you know, just everybody involved and just do it live.
The more I think of all the questions I have, I know they're just going to be young, letting down my 11, 12-year-old self so much. I'm like, let me guess, Pam didn't give him a blowjob while he was recording Soft Parade, did she?
Actually, that one was true.
Oh! Yeah. Huge! That's huge.
but he did not burn her in the closet.
One of my favorite things of that, where you realize before I was even told so much of it was nonsense, that scene in particular, I'm like, that was quite a night. He got drunk, got into a car accident, set his girlfriend on fire, and went to an outside show with a naked Indian lady. I'm like, that seems like a lot in one night.
Well, it's not impossible.
We mentioned Riders of the Storm. In 2002, you did like a run with Ian Astonbury of The Cult, and you had to change the name to Riders of the Storm. It was based because he did a cover that you guys loved. Is that how you got him into the group?
We did a TV show. It's called VH1 Storytellers.
Mm-hmm.
You ever see that?
Yes.
We had about eight different singers that, you know, sang all the different Doors.
Scott Weiland, right? Scott Weiland did?
Yeah, Scott Weiland was there. And the guy from Train, Pat Monahan.
It was an amazing voice.
Yeah. Anyway, so Ian was one of the guys on that show. And we, you know, Danny Sugarman, who was sort of managing us at the time, you know, he knew Ian really well. And he always thought that Ian should be, you know, replace Jim Morrison. And we were always, you know, we never wanted to do that, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's Ian or whoever. But that was about the time that Ray and I decided to go back out and play as the Doors. And we thought Ian was the best pick out of all those guys. So that's how that happened.
I thought from way back, the reason I became a fan of the Cult at all was because of the video and song for Fire Woman, their song Fire. And I felt what I was drawn to that video for, and them, and his voice was, he sounded like Jim Morrison. He had sort of like the Native American motif thing going. I thought there was a very similar vibe. It made so much sense when it happened to me.
Yeah, and you could tell he was a big Doors fan, right?
Yeah,
absolutely. Now, your book, is it something that you've been writing throughout your life, like jotting down notes? Or was it like a year ago or when COVID started, you're like, all right, now I'm going to finally sit down and get this out?
Well, I actually started writing it about 25 years ago, mm-hmm. You know, right after John and Ray's book came out. But the problem was, after their books came out, it just caused so much problems, you know. It's like, you know, because Ray put John down in his book, John put Ray down, and it caused a pretty bad friction between the three of us. And I said, all right, I'm just going to wait. I'm going to wait till all this blows over. And took like 20 years to blow.
Wow. That's a lot of turmoil. That's pretty crazy. Right.
But then the pandemic hit, and I really had some time, and I said, okay, I should really do this. So let's get it done.
And I was saying before that, you know, you're also keeping active. And over the years, I watched when you played with Daryl Hall at Daryl's house. You'd even went on stage with Greta Van Fleet a couple of years ago. You played with Alice in Chains. You are keeping busy this whole time. And during the pandemic, you started releasing guitar tutorials on how to play Doors songs, which is just, it's so great to learn from the guy that did it. Not that I can play it, but it's amazing that you're doing that.
Oh, Ralph knew I was getting ready to say, what? Are you playing these songs, Ralph, now?
He's not. No, I said I can't. Stop it.
I want to hear that.
You don't. Trust me. You come over here and take my guitar from me.
Ralph's too busy taking his bike with the basket for the young girls he steals.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do another one for L.A. Woman.
Oh, that's so cool, man. That's just amazing. Did you like Greta Van Fleet? Did you enjoy, like, when, how did that come about? You're a fan of the band or what?
You know, I saw them play at a benefit. It was, what is it called? They had this cool benefit for, you know, for veterans. It's called Vet Paws. And the veterans come back and they're all messed up, of course. So they get them involved with, you know, adopting dogs and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's very cool. Anyway, it was a charity thing for that, and they were up on stage, and I thought they were amazing, you know. And that's where I met them.
Yeah, I've never seen them live, but I love that first record. I haven't heard the second record yet, but I do dig their vibe.
Oh yeah, no, they guy's amazing singer, and they're all good.
And last year you released The Ritual Begins at Sundown, your first solo album in years. Did that inspire you to record more? Are you going to put out another solo record?
Yeah. In fact, you know, during the pandemic, I had nothing to do, but I have a studio down in Glendale. It's called Horse Latitude Studios. Mm-hmm. It's right down near an area where they have a lot of horses. And, you know, Horse Latitudes was a Doors song that was kind of a very weird song. I don't know if you ever heard it or not. Oh, it's yeah. Like Jim's crazy poetry about the horses that got stuck on a barge in the Mediterranean. When the still sea conspires in armor and her sullen and aborted currents breed tiny monsters, true sailing is dead. Awkward instant, and the first animal is jettisoned, legs furiously pumping their stiff green gallop as heads bob up, poised, delicate, something else, consent in mute nostril agony, carefully refined and sealed over. So when I play Moonlight Drive nowadays, I stick that one right after it. Anyway, so what was I talking
about? About recording a new record.
Yeah. So we after, you know, when the pandemic started, we started doing just recordings, you know, at the studio. And my buddy Phil Chen, who we met over in England back in the 70s, he was playing with, he played on Blow by Blow, you know, and he was with Rod Stewart and stuff. And so John and I formed a band with him. It was called the Butts Band. Mm-hmm. And did a couple albums. Anyway, he just happened to be hanging around the studio and, hey, let's do a reggae record, you know. And we said, okay, let's do a reggae record, but no vocals. It'll just be songs that people know, you know, so they'll know the melody, but it'll be reggae. And it came out really good. It's called Rocks Meets Dub.
Rocks Meets Dub.
Yeah.
And, and is that coming out?
ROX Meets Dub. Yeah, I'm putting it out hopefully in a month or so.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's cool.
Ralph, yeah. Can I ask another fan question?
Please ask as many as you want, Jay. That's what you're here for.
By the way, not other fans. These are my questions.
Yeah, I know.
I've noticed over the last 30 years, your hair has always had a lovely texture. Why was it so dry when you were in the Doors? It was so dry.
It wasn't dry. It was just kinky.
Right. You did say he was Jewish in the beginning. Yeah. Fair enough.
He got better product. He got better product recommendations, Jay. That's what happened.
But I talk about it in the book where when I first joined the band, I had just before that, I had used this... what's it called? Afro Sheen or something like that. It worked great, man. My hair it looked like normal hair. I looked like Brian McLean. Do you know who he is?
It's like a relaxer, like hair relaxer.
Yeah. You know who Brian McLean is?
No.
He was with Love. He looked kind of like the guy in the Stones, Brian Jones, that kind of hair. So that's how my hair looked at that point. And I'm sure that helped me get into the Doors. If I had my kinky hair, they probably would have laughed.
I used to always say that Eugene Levy has Robbie Krieger hair. That was my description of it.
All right, so now
used to call it the worst hair in rock and roll.
Hey there, auto mechanics and super cool do-it-yourself guys.
Yes. I'm listening. Somebody's ears perked up.
I want to tell you about rockauto.com, the online store with every auto part at the best prices.
Oh, yes, bro. I've been putting together my father's 71 Camaro, and I dropped a Hemi in this bitch. Woof, woof. It's going to be raining pussy on me.
Rockauto.com has been in business for 20 years, and they make it easy to find the parts you need at the best possible prices. No more talking to over-the-counter guys who need to order parts and don't even know what you really need. What you really need is just rockauto.com. Hempire, I guess Rock Autopire.
Nothing like putting together a car under a Snap-on calendar of shiny asses and girls in suspenders covering their nipples.
That's class. It screams class.
Then on your break, you jerk off in the break room. Oh, being a mechanic rules so hard. Girls will suck. Girls will blow you if you fix their car for free, Ralph. Did you know
that? Is that what you're doing in your spare time, Rock Auto Parts Pyre?
Did you know when you get your auto parts, women will have sex with you, perhaps, for you to view free car work on them? Their little brains don't understand cars.
The crazy thing is also you're reading the ad verbatim. That's what's bizarre.
Yes, this is all in the copy. I'm a company guy.
Hey, go to rockauto.com. You don't even need a promo code. That's how confident they are of the best possible pricing. So
these
go to Rock
Auto. Dudes are sick. That should be their new tagline.
Tell them you heard about them at rockauto.com on the SDR show. All right, let's get back into it.
Ralph, wait, say rockauto.com.
Rockauto.com.
These dudes are sick.
All right, now let's get back into it. I've read many times that when people ask you your most cherished memory with Jim, you said writing songs with him was your most cherished memory. But my question is, do you remember your last conversation with him?
Yeah, vaguely. I mean, I remember him coming to the into the rehearsal place after we were mixing L.A. Woman, and he came in and he had brought us all a copy of his poetry book that had just come out, Lords and the New Creatures, and he signed it. You know, and of course I lost it. Thing worth a lot of bucks right now. And he said, "Well, guys, I'm going to Paris, you know." And we said, "Yeah, but we haven't finished mixing LA Woman." And he said, "Oh, I'll trust you guys to do it." And that was it, man. He was gone the next day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jay, I have a couple of questions left, but why don't you sneak in a couple more fan questions and then we'll wrap it up with the first.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
Go ahead, Jay.
Oh, you want me to ask another fan question? Oh,
yeah, another one of your fan questions.
You ask one of your questions. I'll think of another great fan question.
Okay, so this came in from a...
You be the boring radio schnook, and then I'll be the cool guy that comes in.
All right, fine enough. Well, this actually came... One of my friends who heard I was interviewing you, who's a big guitar player, I don't really follow what this means exactly. I'm sure it means something to you, that you are a pioneer in bottleneck guitar playing. What was the inspiration for that? And I don't even know what that means. It just sounds like I know what I'm talking about.
Well, it's a slide guitar playing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, back then they didn't have the slide, the silver little, you know, and they make all different ones now. They make them out of glass. They make them out of aluminum and steel. So in those days, you had to break a bottle off, you know, with a wine bottle or something like that, and to make your slide. So I used to make them out of this cheap champagne. I forget what it was, cold duck or something like that. Those made really good slides. But the first guy I heard to play slide was, do you see this fucking voice?
We don't see it. We don't see it.
Okay, good. So, this guy was named Blind Willie Johnson. Have you ever heard him?
No, but I love the name.
Oh, man. So this guy had the graveliest voice you've ever heard. And he played the slide right as exactly what he was singing. So that just blew me away. And then, of course, there was Robert Johnson, who everybody's heard. And there was a couple other guys, Spider John Kerner. He was pretty good. David Ray. These were guys who I heard in high school, you know?
Oh, okay.
But definitely check out Blind Willie Johnson.
Blind Willie Johnson. And do you, going back to the sitar, do you ever play that anymore or you don't?
A little bit. I have a sitar, but it's, I didn't realize it back then, but man, that thing is hard to play. I gotta get lighter strings, because you know you have to bend those notes so far, like 3 or 4 inches, you know, and it's not easy.
And when you said that the first two books came out from your other bandmates, it caused a lot of controversy. Is there any stories in your book that you struggled with, maybe I shouldn't put in here, or you're like, fair game, everything's fair game?
Well, I, John Densmore, sued Bray and I. You know, I don't know if you heard about it or not.
Yes.
But it was kind of a big deal, and we had a big court case and all this. Mm-hmm. So John actually wrote a book about the damn court case. He put the whole transcript in there.
Oh my God!
And he made comments, over that. So I could, I was just gonna not even mention the trial because it was so stupid. But I figured I have to answer some of this stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of a hard decision to make. But I showed it to John, before it came out. It hasn't come out yet. And he was good with it. So I hope he won't be too pissed off.
Fair enough.
I have a question. Did you guys have, did you feel like a gradual climb from getting together and making the album, or was it over, kind of like overnight in the sense of, I guess, do you remember the show when you walked out on stage to an arena or a theater and you were like, holy shit, this is all for us? Because there wasn't social media back then. There was no interaction. It was, you'd go to a show and hope, sure hope people come, to being where it was expected it was going to be a full arena.
Well, after Light My Fire hit, it was just a whole new ball game,
Immediately.
We went from playing the Whiskey, 500 people, to now we're playing 5,000 seats, places even bigger.
Yeah.
I mean, in a way it was gradual because, before the album came out, we played up in San Francisco quite a bit. And that was, the Fillmore, 2,000 people.
But were you so in it though that you didn't? I mean, did you remember the feeling of walking out on stage and being like, "This is like the dream happened. This happened."
Sure did. But I can't remember one show that.
Yeah.
I think the most amazing one to me was the Isle of Wight. I think they had a couple hundred thousand people there. But, even looking out in the audience, after 20 or 30,000, it's all the same, no difference.
Well, famously, you guys got the name from the Doors of Perception book, August Huxley. Was there other names on the table that you're like, thank God we didn't call ourselves this?
No, they actually got the name before I was in the band, so I'm not sure how much argument there was about the Doors. I mean, and to me, I thought it was stupid. I thought, the Doors, what the hell is that? I mean, the Beatles, that's something, but Doors,
if you'd come in,
the doors, close the doors. I thought the Windows would have been better.
You should have came in heavy Jewish and be like, guys, I'm thinking the dreidels, the latkes.
The matzo ball and the soups.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw on the Family Guy thing that really made me laugh. It said tonight, 9 p.m. Doors, 8 p.m., meaning the doors opened at 8 and the band went on at 9. That really made me laugh. I was like, sure, that happened at least once in your career where it said that, which is really funny. All right, we got to do the first, Shannon. Let's hit the first.
The first time ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
The name of the show is Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll. We ask every artist that's ever been on the show their first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll, and by what we mean by that is the first concert you went to that you wanted to go see, your first concert. Hopefully it's a band we know, maybe we don't, but let's hear what it is.
Well, the one that really made me want to play rock and roll was Chuck Berry. And it was billed as a blues festival.
Mm-hmm.
It was Big Mama Thornton. You know her?
Yeah.
She did Hound Dog before Elvis.
Yes.
Big Mama Thornton. It was the Chambers Brothers, who were, they were a blues band at that time. They didn't do rock and roll. So people thought of them as a blues band. So I said, hey, this is cool, And Chuck Berry, and I'd heard Chuck Berry on the radio and stuff, but I'd never seen him. But seeing him that night, man, was unreal. It was like he had his real band, Johnny Johnson, on piano. He had this bass player who was unbelievable. He was like, he would only play with his left hand. He didn't bother plucking, you know what
wow,
I mean?
Wow, that's wild.
Yeah, he'd be smoking a cigarette with the other hand. And Chuck was just on that night, man. He was like, you know, doing the duck walk and the whole thing. And that was it, man. After that, I wanted to do.
And how old were you at that time about?
17.
Okay. Yeah. And then so it was a year later or whatever it is. So now the first drug you ever did, ideally after pot, unless pot wasn't your first drug.
Pot was my first drug, but I didn't know it was pot. I was in school, a private school, Menlo, up in Menlo Park.
Like a good Jew, private school. That's good to hear.
Yeah. So this guy was from New York, and every once in a while, this friend of his would send him this stuff, and he said it was called Boo. Boo.
B-O-O, Boo, okay.
You ever heard that term for pot?
No, never.
Well, that back in at that time, that was one of the nicknames for pot, but we didn't know that. You know, I don't think I would have smoked it had I known it was marijuana, but it was pretty cool, man. It was like, just made us laugh so much, and made music sound really cool.
Fair enough. And then now the first time you ever had sex.
Oh, God. Well, I almost had sex that night. I had this girlfriend, and she was hot to trot. And we were at my parents' house, and so we kept making excuses why we had to go out in the car, you know. And so we went out in the car and drove it down to the parking lot of the park. Mm-hmm. You know, there's like tennis courts and stuff, and nobody there. You know, it's like a pretty good sized parking lot. So we just parked, and we started going, and then all of a sudden, behind us, we see the red lights, red and blue lights. All right, what are you doing in there? Just at the wrong time. I mean, it just, you know, it was perfect. And that was one of the biggest disappointments.
It seems like the cops have been fucking up the doors your whole life. Basically.
Yeah, I mean, how did they know we were there?
Can I tell you something? I had a similar situation happen. Quick thinking. I told my girlfriend, I was like, hop out of the car and like squat like you were getting ready to pee. And we'll say that we'll say that you just came here because we couldn't find a bathroom and you had to pee that bad. I don't think he believed us, but he did let us go.
We happened to me once too. I used to be a strip club DJ, and we went behind a Chili's parking lot to have sex. And a cop came in, you know, lights came in and came up to us. And thankfully I had my money from the night. And then when the cop came, what are you doing? He said, oh, I don't like counting money in the club because there's too many people there. We're just counting the money. And he just let us go. And he said, get out of here. That was fine.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Very true story right
there.
White
privilege, Ralph.
White privilege all the way. Okay. So the new book, which just came out as we're taping this, Set the Night on Fire, Living, Dying, and Playing Guitar with the Doors, features anecdotes and experiences of your whole life, playing with other famous musicians, talking about your brother, mental health issues, drug addiction, a really all-inclusive story about your life. And you did that. You're doing that Dice FM Q&A. You could go to robbiekrieger.com for all information on you. And honestly, I mean, also credited as one of the 100 greatest rock and roll guitarist of all time in Rolling Stone magazine. Dude, it's been an honor to chat with you. Really an honor.
Thanks, guys. That was good. Good interview.
Before we wrap up, Jay, I don't want to step on you if you had any other questions. And if you don't, that's fine. I want to make sure.
I just want to say almost the same thing. This is such a kick for me. What a fan I've been. I've listened to every audio recording of you guys, every interview. It really... the band really did affect my life as like a teenager, and I've carried that over. I've gotten to be like a fan of the music. So it's really, it's such an honor to have talked with you.
See, that's what makes it all worth it for me when I hear stuff like that.
When you find out that Jay likes it is what makes it all worth it.
Yeah, Ralph, you're just a weirdo.
All right, let's do our plugs real quick. Jay, your plugs?
This week comes out, right?
Yeah.
So this weekend I'm in Portland, Portland Helium, Portland, Oregon. Coming up, I have Cleveland. Philadelphia is going to be for a Thanksgiving weekend at Helium down there. So Check me out. I'm all over. Stress Factory coming up, Providence. So go to bigjcomedy.com. Get everything. Listen to me on Faction Talk, Sirius XM 103, The Bonfire, Monday through Friday, and Legion of Skanks right here. And also, well, you know, watch my specials and stuff.
All right. Shannon, your plugs?
Follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. We have also all sorts of interesting people come on and tell their personal experiences with being on bad dates, being in street fights, and brushes with the paranormal.
Okay. And follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. My podcast on health and wellness comes out every Monday called The Good Sugar Podcast. We ask guests this a lot, Jay, when we do the Zooms. And I think we should just take this question because Shannon's show is about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts, right? So we always try and guess, does our guest believe in ghosts or not? And I'm going to say he does believe in ghosts. What do you think, Jay?
No.
No? And Shannon?
I was going to say yes, and I feel like he just started to nod his head no, but I felt like yes.
Yes or no?
Well, not ghosts as such. I definitely believe there's other things that out there that we don't know about, and so maybe yes. I mean, you could call them ghosts.
Pow!
No, you're wrong, Ralph.
How am I wrong?
You're wrong.
He just said we could call them ghosts.
All right.
How is that wrong? Right. Jesus, it couldn't be more right. All right, we always add a song of the week to the show, thesdrshow.com/playlist with a song. Jay, why don't you pick a Doors song? You're such a fan.
Oh,
yeah.
Let's do, oh man, I wanted to say The Crystal Ship, but let's do Soft Parade.
Soft Parade. You ever see the Soft Parade, the cover band, Robbie? Yeah, they were big in New York.
Actually, I played with them one time.
Oh, they were very good. They used to book them a lot in a rock club I booked here in Brooklyn. I was impressed by them. He really embodied him to the point of being an asshole. It was really funny. He was difficult to deal with. He talked in hyperbole. Like, it was really, he was living and breathing him for a while. Pretty wild.
You know what? I want to bring people in that maybe don't know the Doors that well with us. I do Not to Touch the Earth. That's that song.
Ah, there you go.
Okay, we're swapping good. It out. All right. Thank you so much. And we'll see you next time on the SDR show. Thank you, dude. It was really an honor. Peace.
Listening to the SDR Show.